Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm NFL linebacker TJ Watt, and this is my personal best. YPB by Abercrombie is the activewear I'm always wearing. That's why I reached out to co-design their latest drop. I worked with designers to create high-performance activewear that holds up to my toughest workouts. Shop YPB by Abercrombie in-store, online, and in the app. Because your personal best is greater than anything.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone, all protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at WhatsApp.com.
Boston Loose Baseball, episode 215. One final series to break down. The Nats dropped 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. And a look back at what was a difficult season to slog through as a Nationals fan. Plus, we're looking ahead to the introduction of Paul Toboni as the new president of baseball operations this week. What do we want to hear from him? And some big picture thoughts on the offseason ahead. All coming up on Boston Loose Baseball.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
This is BLB. He's Toby Altizer. I'm Grant Paulson. Producer Darius Dammer making everything sound smooth. More so than anything else today, we're going to get into a season recap and a year-long, bigger picture, 10,000-foot view convo. But just to pay off the final series here of the year, the Nats dropped Game 1 10-9 to the White Sox. They had all kinds of power displayed in that game. Josh Bell, home run 22. Luis Garcia, homers 14 through 16. C.J. Abrams went deep for the 19th time, and Dalen Lyle hit his 8th home run. Game 2 of the series, they get a 6-5 win. It's the outstanding rookie, Dalen Lyle, going deep again. Jacob Young also hit a home run, and James Wood belted his 31st bolt of the season. And then in the final game of the year, an 8-0 shutout, Toby, the Nats blanked and nearly no hit. They got one hit by a bad White Sox team in that game. Brad Lord's final year, final start of the year, 4 innings, 5 hits, 5 earned runs, as his ERA ballooned to 4.34 to end the season. So they dropped 2 out of 3 that they played with the White Sox. I got to say, I didn't really care about the results of any of those games. I was tracking Dalen Lyle's finish, James Wood, and how he would put a exclamation point on the campaign, and some of the young developing pieces like Dylan Cruz, some of the young arms as well going into the offseason. And by and large, I think it was a competitive 3 games where the kids played pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough to see Brad Lord finish his season like that. I think that was one thing that stood out, seeing him only go those 4 innings, give up 5 earned runs, kind of struggle in his final start of the year. But to finish the year where he did, where he was a pivotal part of the bullpen, who then had to go back into the rotation and pitch the way that he did and become one of their more reliable starters, was really, really impressive. So disappointing to lose 2 of 3 to the White Sox to finish the season. But like you said, you know, it kind of felt like this was just wrapping things up to a disappointing season. Is almost kind of fitting how this thing ended. But seeing James Wood get over that 30 home run mark, seeing some of these guys really show what they can do down the stretch, Dalen Lyle was really the standout over the last couple of months and what he was able to do. So it was nice to see the young guys perform well when they were able to have stretches. But you just kind of almost felt like the finish line was going to be a relief, because now you get Paul Toboni going to talk to the media coming up on Wednesday. We'll have a reaction pod after that to kind of give you some of our thoughts, and I'm sure we'll dive into some things about what he said and maybe what we want to hear him say here in just a little bit. But, you know, seeing this season come to an end feels like it's just something we've been waiting on, because now you're on to the next. Now you're on to that next step where hopefully they can make some moves this offseason, build this thing up. And, I mean, I don't know that anyone looked at where this team was after winning 71 games in 23 and 24 and thought that this team was somehow going to be five games worse than they were the last 2 years, but that's where they ended up being. So it's almost a relief that the actual baseball is done. Now you can get into the offseason and hopefully build this thing up so you're not repeating what was a disappointing year this year.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think about how long ago 2019 was at this point. You know, a 93-win season where they get in as a wild card, go on the magical carpet ride, win the World Series. And people forget even that 19 year was a 19-31 start through 50 games. So it's not like they were just circuit to circuit a 93-win juggernaut. I mean, that was, you know, really bad first third or so of the season, and then they got red hot, and two-thirds of the year were great. The year before that was a disappointment. They played 500 baseball. So you really have to go back to 2017 to find the last time the Nats went throughout an entire year, a la a 14-3 NFL team or something, where they were just one of the better teams in the league. That's a long time ago. You're talking about like nine baseball seasons ago, and this fan base has been very patient. And unfortunately now, they're going to be asked for patience, and we're going to need to be ready for Paul Toboni to come in here. And if he chooses to blow this thing up, if he wants to detonate the rebuild and restart, whatever vision he has, if that means trading Mackenzie Gore, flipping CJ Abrams, I'm not saying that he should do either of those things, but if he decides they're not that close and that the best move is to get the maximum amount of value for those guys with the most control left, then he should be allowed to do that. And presumably he will be allowed to do that. But it's 97, 107, 91, 91, and 96 losses here during this rebuild dating back to 2021. And this was by far the toughest year for Nats fans since they first made the postseason back in 2012, if you think about it. Between just the massive disappointment of this year overall, the fact that you've got a manager who gets blown out in season, Mike Rizzo's decade-and-a-half-long run ends, he gets fired in season, and then overall, the collapse of James Wood in the second half, who I'm still very high on, very special talent. Dylan Cruz didn't offensively deliver the way that you would have anticipated as a number two overall pick this season. Even the guys that you feel good about, like Cruz in so many other capacities of his game, you know, like Brady House, who did some really good things at the major league level, the power wasn't there. So you can kind of pick nits and have some frustrations about the way this season went. Jake Irvin takes a big step back. Mitchell Parker doesn't look like a guy who should be in the rotation moving forward. You could go round and around with the health at the minor league level. Travis Sakura having to have Tommy John surgery. Harleen Susana not being able to stay on the mound when he had really turned a corner as a pitcher. The injuries to DJ Herz and Josiah Gray's lengthy recovery, never getting back into the rotation. You can go on and on and on with what was just really a disaster of a season. But we've talked all year, Toby, about some of the negatives. I want to look at a couple things here at the end of the year, big picture stuff, some of which went well. And let's start with Dalen Lyle. Pretty amazing. He ended up hitting .299 in 320 at-bats. Well over a half big league season worth of ABs. It was 91 games, but it's a 300 average with an 845 OPS and nine home runs. He homered two times in the final series. He ends up homering four times over his last 15, six times in his final month, with a 376 average over those 30 games and a 700 slug. Was one of the leaders in triples in baseball, despite only playing in 90 games and having basically, you know, 85 or so games worth of at-bats. But what else can you say about the 22-year-old? You know, he started the year in the minors, wasn't really expected to move that quickly or get to the big leagues midway through this year, if at all, especially in a loaded outfield. And he just raked. They didn't have a choice. I was talking to someone in the org early in the season, like, yeah, we got to move this dude up. He's got to be in AAA. He's got to be at the major league level. He's dominating pitching. And each time he got promoted, he got better.
Yeah, it was really, really impressive for him to start in AA. play 21 games there and force his way with an 846 OPS to get up to AAA and then to force his way onto the major league roster. And remember, it was one of those things where he came up, went back down, figured some things out, worked on some things from his first stint, then came back up again, and he wasn't able to be taken out of the lineup because he was so, so good. And for someone that I don't know that we were really expecting before the season for him to be a major contributor for this team. He was someone that maybe he was going to get some time in September. Maybe he was going to come up for an injury and be just kind of a replacement and then go back and chill in AAA. But for him to come up and be probably their best hitter over the last couple of months, like you were laying out some of the numbers, is just so impressive. And it gives you someone where we'd had conversations plenty about the depth of this outfield, and I think it showed where we obviously know Cruz and Wood are going to be a big part of what this franchise is going to be going forward. But Dalen Lyle forced himself into the discussion where if they don't spend money big time in the offseason, probably regardless, he's got to be in real consideration and probably should be one of their starting outfielders on opening day next year. And you're talking about Hassel kind of showed that he can play at the big league level. He didn't get as much of a chance as Lyle, but he also didn't have the results like Dalen Lyle. So, you know, there's some give and take there. But JY is someone that you've talked about could win the gold glove in center field. I think anytime Pete Crow Armstrong is up, he'll probably end up winning it. But regardless, he'll probably finish second again or somewhere right around there. He's so impressive, although it was incredibly disappointing year at the plate. But that's a couple of guys right there that, you know, are fighting over a couple of spots. And if they were to want to go out and sign a slugger at a corner outfield spot or something of that nature, which I would love for them to do if that were an opportunity that they could take advantage of, then great. Now you've got a couple of expendable pieces. But I think seeing some of these young guys with some of their opportunities come up and show that they can play at the big league level, it gives them some opportunities to make some decisions this offseason in terms of what they're going to do with some of these young guys. And seeing Lyle just play so well was just crazy to see. His ability on the base paths, his ability to drive the ball to the ballpark, which you saw over the final month, he's just an electric ball player, and they need more electricity like him in that lineup.
The energy he brings is rare, and he oozes with that kind of flair, a little pizzazz, a little aura that they just don't have otherwise. And it's good to see. You know, you've gotten some of that over the years from CJ Abrams, but you certainly get that kind of winning, drag you into the fight mentality from Dylan Cruz. I love the quote he had the other day about setting the tone from spring training and not just allowing people to do things that aren't correct, that aren't the way it's supposed to be done, to get away with things. He thought that maybe that happened too much this year. And he said, we can't have that next season. And what he didn't say, but what he probably should have said, is because the coaching staff didn't do a damn thing about any of it. You know, there wasn't a single time where someone got benched for getting picked off 3 days in a row or having terrible base running blunders or, you know, just lackadaisically misplaying a ball in the field or whatever. You know, I'm sure there are conversations behind the scenes, but when the same things happen over and over and over and over again for 6 months and it seems like nothing's being done, it's pretty maddening. But players can police themselves, too. Well, and that's something he talked about.
Yeah, to your point, Dylan Cruz had kind of talked about this with Spencer Nussbaum of the Post and talked about that accountability. His quote from Spencer says, this is Dylan Cruz, yeah, it all starts with day one next year, really coming out in spring training, setting the tone, finding the standard right away, holding each other accountable from the start. I think a lot of times this year we were able to just kind of brush that stuff under the rug when we should have said something. I think from the start next year we really need to hold each other accountable and just set the tone, find the standard for next year. And frankly, Grant, I don't necessarily know who it's going to be, because this is a conversation I had with someone in the organization around the ballpark once. Was, you know, it's tough when you have a ball club that is consistently constructed the way that this team has been constructed the last couple of years, where you've got a lot of young ball players that are getting their first experience or they're in their first couple of years of experience in the bigs. And frankly, for a lot of these guys, it's been a losing experience in the bigs. But when you bring guys that are supposed to be that veteran leadership that can help you out, they're only here for a year. Josh Bell, Paul DeJong, think back to Jamer Candelario, who was trade bait, or Nelson Cruz, or even just go through all those guys that have big-time experience, that have been able to win at this level and have been leaders in other clubhouses. But if they're only here for a year, you can only have so much impact. Versus imagine if you're able to have like a guy like a Patrick Corbin that was here the last couple of years. Even though some of the same mistakes were happening, there was at least some accountability from having guys that were signed to longer term deals that were veterans and played with other organizations. It's just tough when it feels like there's a lack of accountability in that clubhouse. And I mean, it's in a tough spot for a guy like a Dylan Cruz. Is he supposed to step in and suddenly hold everybody accountable when he's still a young guy going through his first full season? Is James Wood supposed to step up and do that? I know a lot of fans just think that those guys have to do it because they're the best players on the team. But you also have to think about the fact that they're 22 years old, 23 years old. Are they supposed to go up to some 28-year-old and hold them accountable? Like, that's the tough part about this. So I hope, with Toboney coming in here, that he's able to bring in some guys. Ownership is probably the most important part of this because they have to open up the checkbooks. But I hope they can bring in some guys that, even if they're not going to spend big time on guys for big time talent on the field, have at least some guys that are going to be here for 3-4 years that can be that veteran leadership in the clubhouse. Because realistically, when you look around that clubhouse right now, Grant, it was like guys like Trevor Williams were the veteran leadership. And nothing wrong with Trevor Williams, but he's been injured for a majority of the season, and I don't see him as an overly outspoken guy in terms of being a big-time leader in the clubhouse. They need dudes like that to hold each other accountable. You see some of the stuff that goes on, and there just needs to be accountability. And I think you were talking about it there, Lyle, these young guys, they just need to have some dudes. And if it's that they all hold each other accountable, that's great, but I would love to see some veteran leadership brought in to really help this club along.
Yeah, I mean, in the case of Trevor Williams, naturally, because of his age in a very young clubhouse, right, a guy who is 33 years old, and because of his experience in a clubhouse where there's not a lot of it, he's been in the big league since 2016. He started in, you know, almost 200 games. He was just naturally going to be that guy who's got to pick up the tab. Or, you know, Valentine's Day at spring training, I always told the story, you know, he gets the chocolate rose and put it in everybody's mm-hmm. locker. When they went to the Caps game for a playoff game, collectively as a team, he organized and got two suites bought out and, you know, took everybody. And that was kind of his role. It was Corbin's before his. You need guys like that, and hopefully they have other guys to choose from going into next year. But he'll be back, obviously. He's under contract somehow. Got a two-year deal this past offseason. So he's going to be here, hopefully, out of the bullpen and not as a member of the rotation. But the way things went down the stretch with Irvin and with Parker, you know, based on some injuries still, Josiah Gray, DJ Hurz hopefully competing, but in Hurz's case, he's not going to be back at the start of the year. You know, who knows what the rotation is going to look like. We'll talk more about that going into the offseason. But just real quick on Lyle, his whiff rate finished 81st percentile, so he doesn't swing and miss. His strikeout rate, 82nd percentile, balls in play. He really doesn't walk a lot. I'd like to see that number go up because I think with his speed and the catalyst, he could be at the top of the order. He could be an on-base guy if he drew some walks. You know, based on hitting almost 300, he had a 347 on base, which is respectable enough, but that's with a, you know, basically an inexplicably bad walk rate for a guy that works counts and doesn't swing and miss and doesn't chase. So I'd like to see him as a guy with an above average chase, no swing and miss, no strikeouts, you know, get to a point where maybe that 20th percentile walk rate is closer to even like 35th, 38th. And now you're a 360 on base guy, 365. And now we're talking about, you know, a legitimate all-star caliber player at his ceiling. Defensively, it's never going to be great. I don't think the arm is above average. I don't even know that it's average. I think it's below average. I don't think he's as bad defensively, the metrics will say this year, or that he looked this year. And I say the same thing about James Wood last year. Oftentimes these guys get to the big leagues, they're playing different positions than they played in the minors. The transition can be complicated, but it was a fifth percentile defensive rating, fifth percentile range, 10th percentile arm, 52nd percentile arm strength this year. So just not a, you know, good starter kit necessarily. But here's how this should work. It's pretty easy. Lyle in left, Cruz in center, Wood in right every single day next season, and stop, you know, tinkering with stuff, right? I mean, you're going to have to give James more days off because he wore down, big body. I totally get that. DH him once or twice a week if you want to. Give him a day off every couple of weeks, which they didn't do, you know, for the first calendar year he was in the major leagues. And I do think he got really fatigued quicker this year with that big body than you would have liked. But the big thing to me is Cruz in center field. Because if he's going to hit, you know, 235 or 230 or something, if he does it with 20 powers and 30 steals playing plus defense, you could still be an all-star caliber six-win type player playing plus defense in center. They got a gold glove caliber center fielder in Jacob Young, and you could play him in a lot of late innings and move Cruz over and get Wood or probably Lyle, first off, you know, like out of the game or something like that if you want to. But I just think that the offensive profile for Cruz, based on what we've seen so far, plays so much better at center. And it's why you drafted him too, because he had the staying power in center field. You know, it's funny, Wyatt Langford has actually played more in center than he did this year. And he was the corner guy coming out. It was the big power bat. And the Nats liked at the time talking to people, you know, Cruz because of the up the middle ability. And now he's playing in right field where, you know, the lack of hit and the lack of slug to a lesser extent, you know, just shows up a little bit more. So that's got to be the outfield. I know Young is exceptional defensively, but he's just never going to be an average offensive player. If they really want to just save runs, maybe Toboni's idea, Toby, is elite defensive team up the middle. A, then that would mean probably you can't go into the year with Abrams at short. You'd have to move him to second. You'd have to go get a shortstop or have Nassim Nunez possibly, who's a plus defender, start at short every game. I don't know that you could have Nunez at short and Young in center and score any runs, though. Yes. You know, maybe you go with one of those two guys. I would prefer that both are more bench options. If I was going to start one of them, though, I'd say Nunez at short. With his energy and speed, I think he could hit a little bit maybe. And he's kind of the infield version of Young. And then you move Abrams to second and you get way better defensively on the dirt. But that's the big thing to me is I think Young and Hassel got to get in where they fit in if one or both of those guys isn't a part of packages or traded this offseason.
Yeah, so to your point, Dylan Cruz, after he returned from the injury, was hitting .222, .295 on base, .348 slug. All those numbers need to go up. There's no question about that. But like you said, maybe we have to lower the expectations, unfortunately, to a point where if he can hit .240 and he can play really good defense in center field, then maybe you can make that work. Now, he's on pace for 12 homers over 162. He had three in that time frame. The nice part was you saw the strikeouts come down, struck out 28 times in 40 games versus a much higher strikeout rate before that. So you were at least seeing some of that stuff come to fruition, and the .222 average was higher than what he had before he was injured. So it was at least a little bit better, but still not the rookie season that you really wanted to see out of Dylan Cruz. But you're right. And I think, too, when you look at what Lyle can give you in a corner outfield spot, it's not that dissimilar from some guys that you see around other winning ball clubs. Think of the Brewers. Think of the Guardians. Now, those guys that I'm referring to are Sal Frelick and a guy like Stephen Kwan. Now, they're elite defensively, so totally different in terms of that. But at the plate, it's not as if Kwan gives you a 30-homer power. It's not like Sal Frelick gives you elite power. But those guys are great bat-to-ball guys. Those guys are, like I said, great defensively, so something that Lyle's going to have to work on. But they're able to give you something there at the plate, and they can make it work still and not have a 25, 30-homer bat in a corner outfield spot, which would be your traditional style of guy that you'd have over there. So I think Lyle can make it work. I think you're dead on that Dylan Cruz needs to play center field, and then James Wood is your other corner outfielder. I think there's a lot of spots, frankly, that I would prioritize this offseason above trying to upgrade a corner outfield spot. But if they ultimately decide that's the best place that they could maybe go get another power bat, I'd be totally down with that. But that you're right about the fact that Jacob Young, really love the guy, super great dude. At this point, he's a defensive center fielder, and I was incredibly disappointed with what he did at the plate this year. It just wasn't good enough. And on top of not being able to hit, he was a liability on the base paths for so much of the season, which I didn't see coming. And then Robert Hassel, he's kind of a jack of all trades in the outfield, but I don't know that he's a master of anything. And so one of those guys is going to be your fourth outfielder, and I would imagine maybe you could include one of those guys in a package to go get someone that can help out your ball club more immediately as well, or even if they want to go package some dudes to whatever they ultimately decide to do this offseason. Those guys are your fourth and fifth outfielders. But excited to see what they're going to be able to do to improve this team this offseason.
Yeah, and look, I try not to lecture or get wordy or angry at Nats fans on social media, because God bless you. I mean, if you're sticking out this rebuild, if you're listening to this pod, if you're still engaged, if you're still watching games and going to the ballpark, then you know you are one of the good ones. That said, the toxicity, you know how much the negativity just annoys me in general on Twitter about the Nats, and I certainly understand it, but it's when we start targeting the things that aren't worthy of it, kind of. And like, I thought the whole discourse on James Wood in the second half was ridiculous. But look, he had a bad second half. I mean, that's not to say that it wasn't really, really bad statistically and that there weren't major problems. I think there were a lot of reasons for it. I don't think that their coaching staff that they had, that they had put together, you know, the Davies buddy group that without Davey was still hanging around, did enough to get him out of that funk. You know, you can blame some of it on him. Clearly, he's a professional. He's a big leaguer. He's a big boy, just turned 23 years old. He's going to have to get back to the drawing board this offseason on the swing. Seems like whenever he gets to work with his individual coach, Coach G, you know, he starts these years, minor leagues, major leagues, first, you know, the last couple of years, really, really well. And then as the year goes on, he kind of gets into a funk or out of sync and then eventually gets it back together. It just takes a long time. You know, Josh Bell's one of those guys who's got a, with the long arms, big body, like complicated swing where he can go cold for stretches. And, you know, hopefully that's not inevitably what James Wood is. I think he's a way better hitter who's not going to have that type of inconsistency. I think this is, you know, closer to a like Judgian big man where there's just not a whole lot of holes generally when he's not chasing. But his chase as the year went on fell off, and his takes in the zone is kind of what I want to see figured out. Like, how does he do a better job either being ready to start in that bat to swing, or being more willing to do that, or kind of, you know, have that ace swing, that damage swing, and the ability to offer ready to go, because, you know, in zone takes for him on pitches he could do something with were astronomical this year. So that's something I would want to talk to him about and just get more intel on. But overall, like, that's the end of the negativity when you talk about the swing and miss and the strikeouts. I mean, everything else is borderline elite, not like good. I mean, elite, you know, the stuff that you can't teach, the stuff that you don't need to be a scout. Like, you just hand me numbers and data without names, and I go, ooh, this guy's a star. You know, all of it is awesome with him. His exit velocities, his barrel percentage, his hard hit percentage, his launch angle sweet spot, his bat speed, his walk percentage. I mean, these are all, you know, top five or so percentile in the sport type traits for a 22, now 23-year-old who was doing it on a terrible team in a bad lineup as the marked man all year long. So I don't want to hear a whole lot of the James Wood slander. It was a hell of a year. He's going to hit 35 home runs next season. I think 256 probably becomes 280 plus. I think 825 ops is easy to surpass. He's up around 900 next year. That would be my guess at a progression for him. But look, who they hire, we talk about as a manager matters. The hitting coach higher matters, you know, what kind of philosophy they're going to have and paradigm from a hitting standpoint. Their instructors are going to matter for guys like James Wood, because I just didn't think that their big league staff, and I haven't killed them all year, I haven't called for heads, but you get to the end of the year and you kind of look back at a results business and you go, really? I mean, especially on the hitting side, like, what is their plan offensively, you know, in the minor leagues, in the major leagues? Like, it's there is no like anything they hang their hat on. There's no identity for their hitters. It's wild to me. So I just think it's kind of a system-wide situation and has been for some time. And obviously bringing into Boney, there's going to be some shifts in how they do their business. But I cannot wait to see James Wood on opening day. Like, I am thrilled about this player. He is going to be a superstar. And nothing changed about how I feel about him in the second half, even a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. This is your franchise player. He's someone you can build your team around. He's a cornerstone. He's someone that every other team in Major League Baseball would love to have on their team. He's an elite player, and he had a really bad half. There's no question about it. You look at his numbers from first half to second half. In 95 games in the first half, 95, almost a full 100-game sample, 278 average, 381 on base, 534 slug for a 915 ops, 24 homers, 69 ribbies in that time frame. Still had a lot of strikeouts, 116. That's going to be a part of his game. But this is what's jarring about this, Grant. Second half, 62 games, so 33 less games. Just 11 fewer strikeouts in that time. His batting average went down by 55 points. His on base went down 80. And his slugging percentage went down 150. It's just not good. And to your point, he struggled in the second half, and that's where you need to have a coaching staff that can come in and help you out. It's something
where, make an adjustment.
Yeah, something. Even if it were something, too, where if he's worn down, then find ways to get him rest, whether it's DHing him more, whether it's giving him a day off. Because especially by the time you got to the second half of the year, this team was already largely irrelevant in terms of wins and losses, unfortunately, because of that losing streak that they suffered in June. That team was just out of it at that point. So if you had to rest him for a day, it sucks for the fans.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Into the ballpark because he's one of the few reasons that you show up to watch. But if you're trying to get this guy to get back on track, then try different things. This isn't going to be shocking when I throw these numbers out at you, Grant, because obviously for a team like the Nationals to win, James Wood has to be the driving force. Listen to this, though. In their wins versus their losses, what James Wood does. In their wins this year, James Wood has a .350 batting average, .433 on base, .720 slugs for an ops, .1153. In
wow.
their losses this year, his batting average is .185, .286 on base, .290 slug for a .577 OPS. This is very elementary, but this team went as James Wood went. When he played well, they won. When he played poorly, they lost. So you got to find a way to make sure that he's more consistent next year and doesn't have a second half like he did this year.
Yeah, good numbers. That's fascinating.
At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high-quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby! Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
On Cruz, who we talked about a little bit already, look, here's your proof that I'm not just going to stick with my, you know, to my guns on my original evals on these guys, right? Like with Cruz, I have changed the sight line. So number one, I will say, I'm not going to pat our podcast on the back too often, but if you listen to this podcast prior to the season, and even going back to last year when Cruz was called up, what I have always said, and I think what collectively we have always said, is that Wood is the star, the MVP caliber player of the two. Cruz is a winning, locker room leading, you know, culture creator, and is going to be a really, really excellent, complete, well-rounded player, but that the hit was going to be a struggle. And this was not something I anticipated coming out of LSU when he got on base in all 51 of his games in his final year, when the bat speed, which is still, by the way, well above big league average, and some of the other bat to ball traits and the way he handled velocity in the SEC all led me to believe that he was going to be a really, really safe offensive player. But from the time we saw him in the minors, where he never dominated really at any level, you know, where he struggled even at Double A, like there was never a point where he would just go on this tear for a month and hit .325. Like it just has not happened really at any point. And so my point in bringing this up is coming out of spring training, what you and I were saying is, you know, maybe this is like .250, .260. Now league average is now .245. So maybe update our file to, you know, maybe this is .245, .250 or whatever. And, you know, he's going to hit 20 plus homers and steal 30 bags and play plus defense. And if that happens, it's a several war player who could make some all-star teams. Everyone thinks star means what Wood was in the first half. Like you're going to the all-star game. You're in a home run derby. You're on pace for 40 home runs. Stars comes in different shapes and sizes in this sport. There's different ways to skin the cat and do that, right? And so Dylan Cruz is going to do it in a different way. Having said that, he has not hit close to enough. He hasn't dealt with spin well enough. He is a career .211 hitter and about 410 at-bats right now. That is alarming. You know, that is worrisome, I would say. It's a career 635 OPS for him. So if you get to the All-Star break next year and he's fully healthy and he's played in 90 games and he's hitting 217, I mean, you're closing in on kind of that being what it is maybe. Now, I happen to think there's more in the tank. I think that a couple times this year when he got hurt and as the season ended, like, you started to see it trend up. Again, I think it's not unreasonable to say this is, you know, the floor is more like 225, not 210. And maybe the ceiling's not the 285 to 300 like people once thought, but maybe he does have some seasons where he can hit 275, 280, and mostly he's going to be like a career, you know, 245 or so hitter. I think something like that is very possible. But the defense is plus. The base running is awesome. All of the leadership qualities are incredible. And we could talk about if that's enough to be a gigantic win at 1-2 or not. Another time, I don't know how much it matters, but with Cruz, I am encouraged still. He's going to have to show me something offensively pretty early next year, but it's still basically a 20-homer pace that he was on this year. And with his aggressiveness and speed on the base paths, Toby, I just think he impacts the game in every single way. How many times were you and I sitting at Nats Park going, damn, that was an awesome play, or like, that's why we love this guy. And he's doing that while he's hitting 211 with a 630 ops. So imagine if it's 240 with a 735 or 740 ops. You see what I'm saying? Like, then what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, the concerning part that you were laying out the numbers is they're almost identical to what they were in his brief spout in the big leagues in 24, where it's almost identical average, 10 points off, almost identical on base, almost identical slug. And so in turn, you end up almost identical OPS. And that's a large enough sample size that it's almost a full season. The thing that I think is tough about this is we talked about the coaching staff. I think they've got to figure out there's something going on there because the bat speed is elite and everything else that at the plate kind of stinks. And to have the bat speed, that's natural. That's something that sometimes you can find a little bit more in there, but you kind of either have that or you don't. They just got to figure out a way to fine-tune it. It feels like it's just a little bit off, and I'm not enough of an expert in swing path and all those things, launch angle, all those things. I can't break it all down, but it just feels like there's something a little off with his swing that you could make a little tweak, Grant, and I felt this all along with Dylan Cruz, and it still hasn't gotten to the point, but it feels like at some point for him, when the light bulb goes on, then you'll see a different Dylan Cruz, but we haven't seen that light bulb come on yet, where we might see it for a game, we might see it for a series. I don't know that we've really seen it for a full week at a time yet, but I feel like once you get to a point where he finds something, whether it's a little tweak on the bat path, or I can't break it all down, but I've pointed this out to people when we were watching in the press box, the amount of times that you would watch him drive a ball that should be in the gap, but because it's not squared up correctly, it fades all the way to the right fielder. Just those little things to me, Grant, if they can figure out those little things where he's driving line drives into the gaps versus hitting lazy fly balls that he's not able to square up, whether that's bat path, whether it's making a little swing adjustment. I can't break it all down because I'm not, you know, as in-depth on those things. But to me, there's just little tweaks that have to be made because you can see it from time to time. When everything clicks for him, the talent is there. There's no question. I know the leadership is there. I know the defense is there. I know the base running is there. The baseball IQ is there. It's just figuring out a way to make sure that he can be an effective hitter. And I think if you bring in a new coaching staff, they're going to look at him, hopefully, and identify, okay, we need to make these couple of adjustments, and all of a sudden you're going to see a Dylan Cruz that looks more like the guy that you saw at LSU.
So we'll save a C.J. Abrams conversation that'll need to be a lot longer for a future pod. I mean, frankly, there's a lot of content you and I are going to have coming out talking about these Nats in the days and the weeks ahead. But one of the big things we disagree on going into the offseason is Abrams, where you are looking to kind of move him and shop him. And I want nothing to do with that. I don't think guys who are, you know, going to have, you know, when it's all said and done, I think he's going to be a mainstay fringe 800 OPS middle infielder who can hit 20 home runs a year. I don't look that gift horse in the mouth. And there's going to be plenty of years where it's, you know, 20 home runs and 35 steals for him while hitting 265 or so with a 775 ops. And that's just, it's too good a player. So they got to be in the business of trying to pay non-Boris advised, like, quality offensive pieces. I would try to get an extension done with him if I'm Toboney. But what I would do, though, is go to him and I would offer him good money at the second base position. And I would say, look, you're not a shortstop for the rest of your career with us. You're not going to be a shortstop, whether that starts this coming season or that is further down the road. Like, we're not paying you as a top of the line shortstop, but I'm happy to pay you as a second baseman and start to make that transition, which saves you a lot of money. And if he'd be willing to do that, I don't know that he would be. That would be the start of my negotiation, a way to get him on the books, you know, for a more reasonable rate. But I also know that he and his agent probably know that there's enough places around the big leagues where, with his athleticism and his traits, someone's going to let him play shortstop. We just saw it again this year. You know, you keep waiting for the progression from C.J. Abrams defensively, and you know, you wait for him to make more of the routine plays and to make fewer of the mistakes and to cut down on some of the real unforgivable gaffes kind of at the position. And it just hasn't happened. The carelessness, if you want to call it that, is still there. Now, I will say, if you look at the kind of his whole career, in 2023, he was a ninth percentile fielding run value. Last year, that was down to first percentile. This year, it was around seventh percentile. So while on par, you can make the case that maybe there were some strides. But outs above average this year was second percentile. Last year was first percentile. Was third percentile in 2023. Arm strength this year graded out 39th percentile. Last year, that was 59th percentile, and it was 48th a couple of years ago. So some of the trends here are not great. I just think the bat is too good. And again, I also grade on a curve in the same way I do with James Wood. I mean, C.J. Abrams is only 24. It's a lot of baseball. It's 2,100 plate appearances, but still young enough that he's not even entering really into what is considered the baseball prime years yet, where you fill out, you get better. And I can't underscore this enough. I'm not going to go hard in the paint and say that, like, their offensive staff was bad or failed or anything, but I will tell you, I am very dubious about how good they were and how helpful they were.
How many guys overachieved?
Well, it's true, but like, if I guess here's what I'm trying to say, Tobes. I want to know what it looks like when C.J. Abrams is working with,
yes,
you know, a really good coaching staff and an awesome, you know, what would it look like for a couple of years with like Kevin Long and some of those guys, right? Like, that's what I want to know. So I say all that to say, I'm not giving up on C.J. Abrams. Do I think that he's in the same pantheon as, like, you know, James Wood, Dylan Cruz in terms of long-term value to the org? Maybe not, but this is a guy who could easily be a multi-time All-Star as a 24-year-old who, if you project him out over the next several years at second base, would be one of the better offensive players at the position in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I'll save some more of my thoughts because we can dive into this a little bit deeper with some numbers and different stuff.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On a future pod, I'm fine betting on C.J. Abrams, the player. I don't think it's crazy to say that you don't necessarily want to bet on him as a disciplined athlete, because I don't think it's crazy to bring back up what happened at the end of 2024 with the suspension at the end of the year. There were things that I saw that I wasn't a huge fan of over at the ballpark this year that I don't necessarily
be a little
need to delve
more
into.
Just because that sounds, you know, people go, what is he talking about? Give a little more description on that, because it's not like bad character stuff.
No. CJ's a good dude. He's not doing anything crazy. It's just loafing in some drills and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
go full effort like all the rest of your teammates are. And who knows? Maybe I caught him on a bad day. You know, I don't want to try to blast him for anything like that. But,
I don't even want to put him on the spot. I just say that because if someone's listening, they're like, oh, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
And it's more, you know, it's stuff you could see in any big league park.
No,
right? And when you're taking infield, like, take infield.
You
had two errors last night, man. Let's take this seriously.
And so when I talk about veteran leadership, if you want me to go peel the curtain back a little bit, when I'm talking about bringing in somebody for accountability, I'm looking at one dude that I think would benefit the most from this. Not to say that everyone couldn't benefit, but the guy that I think if they brought in a veteran leader, say they brought in a veteran middle infielder to work with him and hold him accountable, I think CJ's your guy to work with. And if you can hold him accountable, I think he's everything that you just laid out. It's just if there's not a guy that's going to hold him accountable and there are certain actions that I just don't think are winning characteristics or winning routines, then, you know, maybe there's other things that can happen. But, yeah, I mean, the talent is there. The baseball player I would bet on. It's just I think there are some changes that need to be made in terms of his approach to the game.
So let's put a pin in that, and we will come back. I mean, again, we got all off season, and the next several weeks are going to be, I mean, we'll go player by player if we want and just kind of do pods and drop them in here for people in their feed. So make sure you subscribe, rate, review, wherever you get your audio for Bustin' Loose Baseball, because it's going to be a busy time of the year for us, even though, you know, things are slowing down now with the Nats not playing games. There's a lot to dissect. I try to be, you know, professional in this sense of I talk about like players having a bad game, not that a player is bad, right? Because I think that's an important distinction.
Correct.
I will tell you, I'm good on Luis Garcia at this point. And I don't mean that as a slight, and like he's a nice enough guy, and I think there's some redeemable qualities here. He actually hit above league batting average and slugged over 400 as a second baseman. So there's some things to like, but the defense is brutal. You know, he stole 14 bags again this season. Like, he actually is a decent base runner despite not having great speed. But it's, you know, it's 15-ish home runs, you know, might have 20 in a good year, but in a career year. But it's just they're so bad defensively. I mean, one of the biggest problems with this team, I think, when Toboney starts, whatever that eval looks like, diving deep into the numbers and watching whatever tape he gets his hands on, and he hires his guys that he loves and says, come back with a report. What they're going to see is the fastest, cheapest way to improve this team is to play better defense. It was god-awful, and especially in the infield. So I promise you, you can't have Abrams at short and Garcia at second. Like, if you want to do the Garcia at second thing, then I don't know what you do at short. But the two of them together is an HOV lane, easy pass in your windshield on your way to being one of the worst defensive teams in baseball. And you saw it this year until they had Brady House at third. I mean, they had Amed Rosario at times who had a frying pan over at third base. Like, you know, Josh Bell playing a lot of first down the stretch. Lowe was supposed to have been a good first baseman defensively.
He was bad.
He'd won a gold glove. That didn't go well. Bell probably wasn't much of a drop-off if I had to guess. But, like, that's just an indictment on Lowe more than an endorsement of Bell. So, like, they got to do something there defensively. I've kind of been there, done that, seen it. I think Garcia is a guy actually maybe tradable, like trade chippable in some way, because he can hit. I mean, he does make contact. He doesn't really swing and miss. And so I think there's some interest there for other teams as a like a Victor Robles-esque like reboot candidate in Seattle or something. But yeah, I would say those are some of the guys we should hit on. Brady House, we should probably call attention to. The disappointment for him was the slug was 322 at the major league level, and his ops was 574. He ended up hitting about 235. Look, I thought it was going to be a real challenge getting him to the show. There was going to be some swing and miss. There was going to be some chase. He was going to have some problems like being consistent offensively. I just thought there would be more damage, and I thought like he'll have 15 home runs and hit, you know, 206 or something like that. It was kind of the opposite for several weeks where he didn't swing and miss that much. He didn't chase a whole lot. He had good at bats, but the home runs weren't there. And in the end, you know, it kind of came back to earth a little bit with the contact and the batting average. But I will tell you this, I don't worry 1 second about his power. It will come, and he is going to be a mid-20s, maybe 30 home run big league hitter with that pop. The question for me is going to be, you know, the other metrics, the other kind of hit tool type things.
Yeah, the thing about Brady House that's interesting is if you've had the opportunity, and I'm going to plead for this once again, please open up Nationals Park earlier so fans can watch batting practice. If you had the opportunity to watch him take batting practice, which we had the opportunity to watch him do in spring training, I also had the opportunity to watch him once he was in the bigs, he has a different sound off his bat than anyone else, and I'm even including James Wood. I don't know if it's the style of bat or something, but the sound for him is just different, and it's so obvious how much power he has. So you're right. If you're worried about the power not showing up, it's there. It's just give him some time. It took him some time for it to show up in the minor leagues. It's going to show up. But the things that are nice redeeming qualities for him, his defense was great. You got to be thrilled with what you saw defensively. I said immediately he'd be an upgrade defensively, and that showed to be true. It's just about finding a way for that power to show up in games. Also, he's got to draw some walks. But similar to what we talked about with so many of these other young guys, I'm just curious when you bring in a new staff to work with these guys and you have a new voice and you get fresh set of eyes and, oh, yeah, let's just tweak this and do this and try this and those little things that when you have someone new come over and work with you, I wouldn't be surprised if you see some of these guys, not even, like you said, an indictment on the old guys who so many fans just couldn't stand. I don't know that they were good. I'm not going to advocate that they were, but I think getting a fresh set of eyes in here, new manager, new voices, I think that's going to do a lot of guys a lot of good, and I think you could see some results because of it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.